Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and it's my pleasure and privilege to present this evening Mike Rupert, a former LAPD narcotics detective who's been instrumental in helping to expose some of the intelligence community's involvement in the drug trafficking, and Ray Coleman, attorney at law, law partner of William Pepper, James Earl Ray's attorney, and the counsel for Bill Tyree in a vitally important lawsuit. Gentlemen, welcome to our airways.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you very much for asking.
Let me begin this program with a disclaimer, and I want to make it clear that this is in no way to cast aspersions on the lawsuit, on the information contained in it, or on any of the people in any way involved with it. But neither myself nor any of the stations that I work on or that carry this broadcast has any information incriminating any of the people involved in this suit in any criminal activities, nor, as far as I know, have any of them been convicted of any crimes. I will also be referring to the various points of information made as allegations, and again, that is simply pro forma from a legal standpoint. That is in no way to cast aspersions on any of the people or any of the information involved in the suit. Okay?
I'm with you.
All righty. Ray Coleman, you are currently representing Bill Tyree, a former Green Beret soldier who has been involved in a number of activities, and perhaps it's best that we begin the discussion with a review of some points of information that we've covered in previous broadcasts with Mike Rupert. Operation Watchtower, Operation Orwell.
Yes. He states that he was involved from 75, 76 with Watchtower, ordered to participate, and in 77 he was out of the Army, he went back in 77, and late 77, 78 he participated in Orwell. Orwell was a domestic operation in New England particularly. Watchtower, of course, was based in Panama, and the activities took place along the line between South America and Central America.
And that involved the placing of electronic beacons in order to guide some rather interesting traffic, allegedly, into the United States.
Air traffic, approximately, 100.5 or aircraft, cargo aircraft, into Panama originally.
And then those craft were allegedly carrying?
Mr. Tyree states that they were carrying drugs, and that he had seen them offloaded, huge pallets. If anybody's been in the military, offloaded the pallets filled with the drugs and stored in warehouses on United States military bases in Panama.
And these drugs ultimately, allegedly, found their way into the United States, correct?
Yes. He has obtained information from people subsequently, chronologically, and also with the individual operations, that those drugs were further transported into the United States.
And Operation Orwell was an operation allegedly directed at people in the United States in connection with this traffic.
Well, with the traffic, in that the powers that created this operation, Watchtower, wanted to keep it suppressed from the United States public, and Orwell targeted specific community leaders, political, religious, judiciary, to see if any information came up on Watchtower.
And this was basically an interdiction operation then, or one attempted at allegedly preventing the interdiction of that traffic?
If possible, if not possible, then at least they would know who was talking about it and in what context.
Mike Rupert, in a previous discussion, we touched on a document that discusses some of the particulars of Watchtower and Orwell, and that was the Cutolo affidavit. I wonder if you'd review that briefly for us.
Well, on its face, the Cutolo affidavit was written and signed by Colonel Edward Cutolo, who had been the commanding officer of 10 Special Forces Group Airborne at the time of the murder of Bill's wife, Elaine, near Fort Devens. He had also been active with U.S. Army Special Forces 7th Group in Panama at the time that some of the Watchtower missions took place, and when in fact he commanded some of those missions, and some of those missions Bill Tyree was on. The document itself is exceptionally detailed in its description, both of the Watchtower missions and the participants therein. That would include the names of Ted Shackley, Tom Clines, Ed Wilson, Manuel Noriega, an Israeli Mossad agent named Mike Harari. It describes a number of murders in connection with those missions. And then it goes into great detail about the Orwell operations at Fort Devens, and the murder of Elaine Tyree, and how Bill Tyree was framed, if you will, for the murder of his own wife. Now, what's interesting about the document, it remains, and I've been looking at documents for 20, 21 years now, the most genuine living document I have ever seen, in that every 6 weeks a new bit of information surfaces which corroborates information in the Cutolo affidavit. One thing that I noticed, however, and it was noted by another investigator, is that Ed Cutolo could not have written the document as it stands. The reason why I say that is because he refers in several places in the document to the Panamanian Defense Forces, and they were not so named until several years after Ed Cutolo himself died mysteriously in England. That doesn't change the truth of the document, in that it's been corroborated from a growing number of sources and support documents over the years. So it's a fascinating piece of work, and it's very accurate.
Before we get back to some of the particulars concerning the Cutolo affidavit and some of the things connected with that, Ray Coleman, in this lawsuit by Bill Tyree, some very prominent defendants are named. I wonder if you would run down the list of defendants for us before we get back to some of the particulars.
Well, the CIA,
mm-hmm.
L. Scott Harshbarger, which for people not in this area is the present Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, who is running for governor. Paul Cellucci, who is the present governor. George Bush, former president. Dulles, Chip Tatum. And recently we have added Oliver North and William Jefferson Clinton, the sitting president.
A formidable array of individuals and institutions, certainly. Now, Mike Rupert, back to the Cutolo affidavit for a second. One of the main lines of discussion in that concerns a series of personalities and institutions who wind through the tangled web around Messrs. Edwin Wilson and Frank Turpel, an evidentiary tributary that runs right up through Iran-Contra. I wonder if you'd touch on their activities and how it relates to that affidavit.
Well, I think the best way to do that is to take another step back before the era of the mid-70s when Watchtower took place, to go back to Southeast Asia, wherein you find Ted Shackley and Tom Clines serving, Tom Clines as the deputy to Ted Shackley as CIA station chief in Laos, later as when Shackley was station chief in Saigon, and then when Shackley ran the Far East group at CIA. Ed Wilson came up in that milieu, along with people like Richard Secord and, in fact, Oliver North, who was working on Latin American projects in the mid-late 70s. Wilson and Turpo got involved or in trouble for supposedly selling illegal weapons in the Middle East to Gaddafi and other similar groups. Turpo is still at large after all these years. Wilson is serving a life sentence. But the basic group of CIA people, and you have to bear in mind also that George Bush was director of Central Intelligence and was boss of the agency in 1976 for the whole year up until January 21st, 77, I believe, when Stan Turner came in, when the Watchtower missions took place. So this crew, and Michael Harari turns up heavily throughout Iran-Contra, of course, as does Manuel Noriega, who we know that George Bush removed as president of Panama in 1989 as we switched our allegiance from the Medellin to the Cali cartel. Noriega had been a Medellin guy all the way. So this is a very, it's the usual suspects. That's what it is.
Now, Bill Tyree had been involved, allegedly, in operations Watchtower and Orwell. He allegedly grew disenchanted. His wife, Elaine, also in the military, was apparently acting as an informant for the Army's Criminal Investigations Division and keeping a diary. She was then murdered, Ray, and this brings us directly to some of the circumstances surrounding the lawsuit.
Yes, that pretty much sums it up. He wished, Billy desired to get out and went to his commanding officer, Colonel Cotullo, and said that he basically wanted to get out of a Special Forces group. Excuse me. That was done. He was transferred to the 441st Military Intelligence Detachment, which basically didn't take him too far out of the fire. His wife had been recruited as a Army confidential informant. We don't know the exact date. We do have a form which was signed by a criminal investigative detachment agent, a guy by the name of Brzezinski, who authenticates the signature but says he doesn't remember recruiting her. Both Mrs. Tyree and Brzezinski served in, Alabama, based down in Alabama, and she kept notebooks or diaries, if you wish, on activities surrounding various bases she served at, Fort Lee, and most particularly Fort Devens. Those activities involved illegal conduct of the military or in conjunction with the military. Almost everybody in town knew about it. Various and sundry threats were received by the Tyrees, and she was found murdered January 30th, 1979, at noontime.
Now, a number of present and former Massachusetts officials figure in this lawsuit in one way or another, some as defendants. Ray, if you could briefly detail the rather tortuous legal path that Bill Tyree has followed since the time of his wife's murder.
Well, there were various and sundry direct appeals based upon the Commonwealth not telling Billy or his attorney there was no warrant issued for the search after once the body was found, which is almost an automatic kind of thing. You find a body, you automatically have grounds for a warrant.
So that in and of itself is extraordinary.
Right. During the probable cause hearing, several state troopers who were going to testify found that the courthouse, the district courthouse, was wired. There was a 20-foot tower outside. Now, Fort Devens, for those people not familiar, is approximately 2-3 miles away from the courthouse. And this radio tower, it took the district attorney in charge of any investigation in the county about 2 to 3 weeks to get a warrant issued to dismantle the radio tower. All the rooms in the courthouse were bugged, including judges' chambers and conference rooms for defendants. That was basically ignored. It was brought forth in a suit. That suit has not gone anywhere in 20 years. The tapes that resulted from the wiretap were destroyed by one of the assistant district attorneys. He said he did it with authorization, can't remember who gave it to him or under what circumstances. Nothing has been done about that. In 1985, when Billy found out, or after Billy found out about the no warrant search and such, he instituted a civil action against the chief of police and the state troopers who were doing the investigation. He won those. He received an award against both parties. One party, the state trooper, went to the Supreme Judicial Court, but Billy won in that particular court. He has written various and sundry demand letters to the Attorney General Harshbarger and to the present District Attorney for Middlesex County, Tom Riley. They basically have been ignored. In June, we went to Superior Court, Middlesex Superior Court, requesting that court to order the return of the property or records to investigate what happened to all this property. That was denied. The motion was denied as far as anything. The district attorney got up and said that they couldn't find anything and couldn't find any records. Because of the ignoring of the various demand letters, and they would not even sit down and just say, hey, look, guy, you know, what do you want? What can we do? This is what we got. This is what we don't have. Mr. Tyree felt it was necessary to institute a criminal complaint. The criminal complaint originally was heard in March in Rentham, which is right near Walpole, where Mr. Tyree is incarcerated. That court said, we don't have jurisdiction. You have to go back to where the crime occurred. We were there today, and we were heard by a magistrate to determine if there was sufficient evidence to have a hearing for a criminal complaint. That's where we are up to now. September 4th, we filed this federal lawsuit basically to get the action out of the parochial state judiciary. And at this particular point in time, we're just basically filing various and sundry motions, we have already started discovery, and that's pretty much where we are up to date.
Now, are these maneuverings inside of the Massachusetts legal system and some of the allegedly extraordinary treatment that Bill Tyree has received at the hands of that system the basis for including Messrs. Harshbarger and Salucci in the suit?
Yes. The allegations are that Harshbarger knew, or certainly should have known, about the corrupt police force in AIR since he had investigated them at the request of the AIR selectmen.
And that, by the way, that town is A-Y-E-R for those not familiar with Massachusetts. Go ahead, Ray.
Right. Mr. Salucci was a law partner of Mr. McKittrick, who was the defending attorney for the co-defendant, Eric Aarhus.
How's that spelled?
A-A-R-H-U-S.
Right. Continue.
And so he, not having any conflict in representing the state at the time or anything like that, would have been privy to what was going on. And certainly when any paper with Billy's name came across his desk as lieutenant governor or as governor, he should have known what a queer kind of deal it was. Since his law partner, when I talked to him last year, was still very upset about the outcome for his client and Billy.
Mm-hmm. With regard to the actual conviction of Bill Tyree, now he has had more than one trial, correct?
No, he had a probable cause hearing, which is a determination of whether there is sufficient evidence against the person to go to trial.
Okay, that's the point that I had a question about.
Right. That was held in front of Judge Killam, James Killam. And Judge Killam, after 14 days and 50 witnesses, determined that there was no probable cause to hold Billy for the murder of his wife. Judge Killam, in all fairness, did say that Billy had screwed up in that once he figured out what had happened, he should have immediately gone to the police or law enforcement officials. He didn't, so he sort of was a bad boy in that kind of context, but that he neither planned nor participated in any sense the homicide of his wife.
And Judge Killam has actually stated for an A&E documentary that he believes Tyree to be innocent of that murder.
Yes, he did that as A&E broadcast was done by an independent producer, and he stated that during that broadcast, during the filming, yes.
Mike Rupert, there's a fascinating character who has figured prominently in your From the Wilderness newsletter. That's a fellow named Albert Vincent Caron. Now, he had apparently known of, he had spoken, I should say, of Bill Tyree, but by the name Sandy. I wonder if you could detail or review for us briefly how Sandy and Albert Vincent Caron came to be connected in an evidentiary sense with the Tyree suit.
Well, they were actually connected for a great many years. It just took a long time for several key people to discover it, namely Bill Tyree himself, Ray, and Dee Ferdinand, who was the daughter of Al Caron. Briefly, Al Caron is a former NYPD detective, retired in 66, was CIA his whole life and had a lifelong history of close relationships with some of the highest organized, ranking organized crime figures in the country, specifically Santos Traficante, and a great many others. His phone book is chock full of mafia figures from New York, but also we find in his phone book the home address and phone number of William Casey, Ronald Reagan's director of Central Intelligence. And he knew that the whole board of directors of the Nugenhan Bank, which you have covered extensively on your shows before, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
Caron was basically the chief bagman and paymaster for most of the heaviest and dirtiest covert CIA operations over a period of, I would guess, approximately 20-25 years. He turns up in Iran-Contra heavily, knew Ali North and so on. What was unknown to everyone was that, for a long time, was that Caron had actually participated in the Watchtower missions. He had described it was his pattern, according to his daughter Dee, and the investigations I've done on him, to describe various operations and places without necessarily referring to them by their code names, as in Watchtower or so forth. Over the years, Al Caron had many times and on many occasions referred to a guy named Sandy, who had, and I'm paraphrasing, but you know, he had gotten screwed by the government, and that fact weighed heavily on Al Caron because apparently he had had something to do with that. There were a set of diaries which had been in the possession of Caron, which had been seen and touched by the family shortly after the murder. And again, the name Tyree was never mentioned. These diaries were taken by Caron in 79 and given back to CIA, which was what's alleged in the suit, where the orders to carry out the murder originated. But it wasn't until roughly, I guess, a year and a half, 2 years ago, that the pieces began to fall into place that Sandy was, in fact, Bill Tyree. Now, Dee Ferdinand, that is her married name, had, of course, the maiden name of Caron. And I believe it was in 96, 97 when another investigator, now deceased Bill McCoy, mentioned the name Dee Caron Ferdinand to Tyree, and that all of a sudden, from my understanding, started setting off bells and whistles every place, and everybody started saying, "Who? What? Wait a minute!" And it was within the year thereafter that everybody realized that the Caron family in New Mexico, with whom I had had long and detailed contact, and I'd also had some contact with Bill Tyree, were actually very, very closely connected.
Now, in many ways, it appears to me that from an evidentiary standpoint, and feel free to correct me at any point here, Ray, it appears to me, being someone who's not sophisticated legally, that Albert Caron appears to be sort of the glue that fastens together many of the different elements that figure in this lawsuit.
Absolutely correct, yes. He took a liking to Billy. Billy at the time, and we joke about it, but at the time he had light brown hair. His hair is lighter now. And he participated, Caron participated in a somewhat passive situation with some of the operations that Billy was in, both Watchtower and other smaller operations that they used, that the military or under the direction of the CIA or whoever used to use Special Forces units. So he knew Billy very intimately.
Now, with regard to, and this is a line of discussion that we'll be continuing on the other side, because we have a little less than 3 minutes on this side here of the interview. There are a lot of disparate elements, or seemingly disparate elements, in this lawsuit, not just George Bush, who was director of CIA when Watchtower and Orwell were allegedly going on, but the Central Intelligence Agency, which allegedly presided over these operations. Then we have people like Oliver North and Bill Clinton. Watchtower and Orwell were pretty much done deals, as was the conviction of Bill Tyree, when Oliver North and Bill Clinton emerged on the national, or in Clinton's case, Arkansas stages. How, from legal standpoint, Ray, do these, don't reveal anything that would be imprudent on the air, but how, from a legal standpoint, do these various elements connect? In other words, how is one going to approach this as a litigant?
Well, we don't know how far back Bush goes. We do know when he was director of Central Intelligence, but we really don't know his activities prior to that, as far as the Central Intelligence Agency is concerned, or these types of activities with the government. As far as Ollie North is concerned, his actions are consistent with a continuing cover-up, which is resulting in the continued incarceration of Billy. We do know that he came up through the military officers' rank, through the academy, and so on and so forth. And he seemed to go toward high motivation, high intelligence, high adrenaline flow activities. And so he may have participated in other aspects of Watchtower. We're trying to get some handle on that at this particular point in time. Clinton, basically his part of this lawsuit is the continued illegal operation, specifically drug trafficking, gun running, and cover-up. There have been various and sundry chances for him to respond to printed material about MENA and various other aspects of drug running, which he would have known about. And he has refused at this particular point in time to acknowledge those, and at that particular point in time when MENA was at its height, to do anything about it. My understanding is that he actually participated in suppressing any of that information getting out to the public. So that's why he is named as a defendant.
Okay, well, we're going to take up all of these subjects at greater length and in greater detail in the second half of our interview. We've been visiting with Ray Coleman, the attorney for Bill Tyree and a law partner of William Pepper, author of Orders to Kill, and the attorney for the late James Earl Ray, and Mike Rupert, former LAPD narcotics detective, the editor of the From the Wilderness newsletter, and a longtime and tireless crusader in order to expose the role of elements of the intelligence community in the drug traffic. For Ray Coleman and Mike Rupert, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.